Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to the Pinkney to Pinkney Show. I am the Reverend Edward Pinkney. I tell you, I have had a week that nobody would ever forget. I tell you, I was in New York, and me and my wife, we went to New York to eulogize my friend, Ralph Horner, who is really a tremendous person. He's one of the greatest activists in the history. Matter of fact, he's known all over the world, and I had the honor of saying the last words over him, because Ralph was the mighty in the beginning of strength. He was built like a bull. He really, really had it going on. You know, the excellency of his dignity, the excellency of his wisdom, the excellency of his knowledge. Ralph was a real liberator. You see, we don't have those out there like that today. You see, everybody is afraid that the oppressor, if you're afraid that the oppressor is coming after you, already dead. You see, that's what we don't know, you know. You know, and he also, you know, will say this too. Only a fool fights by the rule that his enemy have laid out and laid down for him. He said, the book, you can't go by the book when you're dealing with evil, wicked people. You see, a man died when he refused to stand up for what is right. A man died when he refused to stand up for justice. A man dies when he refused to stand up for his children. A man dies when he refused to stand up for the women. A man dies. He dies when he refused to do anything. You see, we're so busy worrying about these devils that they're going to do something to us. They're going to do something to you anyway. You see, you don't have to do something to them for them to do something to you, because their job is to drive you out of here. Let me tell you, you have heard of white flight, right? Here in Benton Harbor, we have black flight. I'm moving out of here now. We have almost as many white folks here than black folks. We was like 99% black here, 99. Now we're about, I'm going to say this, now we're about, I would say, maybe in about 65% black, you see. And it's going to get worse because they're building and we're sleeping. Building and we are sleeping, you see. And that's the main problem that we have. Black people scared to reach out. Don't think about yourself anymore. It's got to be the future that we're dealing with. We have to deal with the future now. We have to make sure we're doing all the things that's right to help, us take this thing to a whole different level. We, you know, it's the way we look at doing things now, it won't be long. It will not be long before we might even be eliminated. We're 50 million strong, you see. They try to, we're around 40. Well, 40, 50 million. We're a country by ourselves. Do you know we spend billions and billions and billions of dollars and very few dollars with black people? Do you realize that? We spend very few dollars when it comes to black people. Have black business like we normally have. You know, if there is a black store, a grocery store, we prefer to go to the Arabs. Now, here's nothing. I won't go to an Arab store. You know, I'm not going to do it. I don't even want to go there for gas if I'm running out of gas. But now I got to go to the white man to get gas. But anything to keep the money in the community. The Arabs now own all the food stores, candy stores in the community, all the gas stations in the community. We have one black store, and he won't sell out to these Arabs. He won't do it, and he's not going to do it, you see. But see, one thing about black folks want money, and they'll do anything to get it. That's why we have Sambos. They're motivated by money. Even though they're not giving them a lot of money, they're motivated by it. And for some reason, black people want white people to like them. Why would you want people to like you who has destroyed you and trying to destroy your children? They're fighting. They're fighting to destroy you. They're doing everything in their power to destroy you. You see, that's important. I couldn't, you know, I tell you, when I was in New York, I really had a great time dealing with some real people. You see what I'm saying? Some real people. You see, unfortunately, and I repeat this, we got to get better. We got to get better. We're where we at now is, it appears to me that we're digging a hole for ourselves and that we are not going to be able to get out of that hole. That's the way it appears to me. That don't make me right. But it appears that we're digging a hole for ourselves. You see, a little bit about the educational system here in Benton Harbor. They started destroying the educational system here over 30 years ago. People who graduated from Benton Harbor High School basically have what you call maybe an eighth grade education or less, you see. And they know that. That's why Whirlpool Corporation is able to do so. See, I knew there was a problem. Whirlpool brought in this guy from Oxford. Now, everybody don't know about Oxford. You know, that's supposed to be the upper echelon of intelligence. You see, Oxford, Cambridge, those are the colleges. So they bring this guy in, and this guy, his job was to make sure that the residents of Benton Harbor do not get educated. And they don't know. The parents don't be out here checking on. The parents take 24 hours to feed your family. So I can't really fault them 100%, but you always check on your children. Never allow your children to be miseducated. Fight for what is right. Stand up for your children, even at your own expense. My goal is to fight for everybody. My goal is to make sure that the children here get an education. This one person told me that they prefer to homeschool their child. They said they're able to actually educate them better than allowing them to go to the city of Benton Harbor, where it's violent. Nobody seems to care. But unfortunately, she made one statement that really got my attention. She says, sending your child to Benton Harbor Area School is child abuse. It's child abuse. And she says she would never, ever abuse her child by allowing her to go to the city of Benton Harbor Area School. And I respect that. I respect it because she was willing to say it. Folks are so scared to say stuff. You know, they tough when it comes to you and I. You know, they'll shoot you. You look what you looking at. But when it comes to dealing with that system and that white devil they're not going to move them. It's not going to happen. You see, that's their history. You see, remember this. They put their pants on one leg at a time, just like you. You see, they put their pants on one leg at a time, just like you. Whoa. This is no conflict. This is the real deal. When you want to destroy a community, a race of people, you attack the educational system. That's how you deal with that. That's how you deal with the people you're trying to eliminate, you see. And I can see it. I can see it loud and clear. I can see it loud and clear what they're doing, you see. And then you should go to other cities and see what they're doing. They basically got the same formula they use in every area. One thing we don't know, have you ever heard of what they call ghetto tax? Yes. If you live in a black community, you are being ghetto taxed. Everything in the black community costs more. Everything. You say, well, it's like this all over. But you can go to other areas and see the difference. Just by living in a black community, they hit you with the ghetto tax. Groceries, gas, you name it, they hit you with it. You see, all the necessities, they do that. Because most of the time, you can't go. Most people in the city, in black community, don't have automobiles. So they can't go. I don't go to Arab stores. I don't go buy gas from Arabs. I don't do that. I won't do that. I will not spend my money there unless it's a darn emergency. And it better be a big one. I will not do it. I'm not going to do it. One of the things we should do, we should have never allowed these people to come into our community. How you allow people to come into your community who you're spending money with, and they take the money out of the community and don't give back to the community? You see, we're quick to talk about other black folks, but we won't talk about these Arabs and these white devils. We won't talk about them. That's who we need to talk about. But I do want to say this. I had a splendid time in New York. I'm going to the Sample of the Year Award. We talked about having it. I didn't get a chance to talk to anybody in that lives directly in Harlem, but I did talk to a few other people on the phone about they want to get involved with this, the Sample of the Year Award, and have a face-off and stuff like that. We're talking about places like Harlem, the Bronx, Queens, Brooklyn. Those are the places that I'm going to be talking in. Because I really want this to go all across the country, because it's important. You know, being in New York, you see a different group of people. You see people a little bit more gung-ho, but a bigger city, but understands the issue. You see, we have to understand the issue more than anything else. And my thing, my sermon was more about being a revolutionary, like Jesus was. Jesus was a revolutionary. He was the greatest revolutionary that ever lived. You see, most preachers ain't going there because they won't throw you them old softballs up there, them big balloon balls, though, until you can hit on. Preachers not going to deal with stuff like that, which is so amazing. But before I go further, I want to say that I was listening to this show. They had this pastor from Pilgrim Rest, Carlton Lynch, on there. He had sexually attacked this young lady, but he got off. He got off, and I got to say that he got off. But they rhubarbed him all across the country. They was on him like white on rice. I mean, they went after him like pit bull. I mean, some of the comments they were saying scared me. I reached for my knife. I said, whoa, slow down, y'all getting ready to get violent in here, you know? Oh, it was ugly. They was calling him all kind of names. Matter of fact, they had to take the video down. It was so bad, you know. It was ugly. I mean, when I say ugly, it was ugly. I mean, it was like a war zone, you know, trying to tell them how he won the case and stuff like that. Boy, it was probably about 300-400 comments, and it was bad. It was really, really, it was a sad moment too, because I guess he thought that he, by him being, he got through this, that people were going to be on his side. Nobody was on his side. But what one lady did say, well, hey, I've been to his church before. And they rhubarbed her. They said, you going to hell. They said, you going straight to hell. You went into the devil's den. But that's the way it is. Look, I want to get into this because I got to bring in my first guest. My first guest is going to be George. I'm going to apologize to George. I didn't get a chance to get to all those comments, and but that's okay. We'll start fresh, because by me being out of town, I've been traveling a lot. I haven't been able to do a lot of things, but I'm going to tell you, this is for all samples. All. I'm going to tell you a little bit about me. I'm going to say what I want to say. I'm going to do whatever I want to do. The only thing I ask of you, don't bother me, and I promise I won't bother you. If you see me anywhere, I don't talk to Sambo for any reason. Any. If you're having a heart attack, I'm going to have to step over you, because I don't want to have nothing to do with a Sambo. Nothing. The way you have hurt our people and destroyed our people, I will not accept a Sambo even talking to me for any reason. That is not going to happen. You may want to talk to a Sambo. That's on you. But I'm not. I do not talk to Sambos. I do not talk to Sambos for any reason. And if you want to talk to them, that's you. That's why we're in this compromising position today. Because we allow these Sambos to get back into our community. They want to be something so bad, you see. You are somebody. But first, be a human being. Be a humanitarian. Be that, you see. Cannot stand black people who have been robbed of themselves. You see, when white folks can't defeat you, and they can't defeat me, I tear them up. You know, I tear them up. But they coming. That's their job. I understand that. They're coming. You know, you can always find a black person, some bootlicker, buck kissing, buck dancing, scumbag, evil white folks bitch. You're going to do it. And I just don't see it. All the hell that we have been through, you know, as a people, we have been traumatized. For over 450 years, nothing but abuse, mistreatment, torture. They have tortured us, and we don't say nothing. And I look at you, you ready to shoot me. I look at you, your butt is ready to shoot me, and that white man got his foot all up your butt, size 18 shoe in your butt, and you're not saying a mumbling word, destroying your children educationally, and you want to be just like the mistreatment, the torture, the hanging. These are Christians. That's why I don't put no value in a person telling me they're a Christian. I don't put no value in that. I don't put nothing in a person claiming to be a Christian. No, you got to show me. If you don't show me, I don't want to see it. We got, you know, so many, everybody into money, even preaching. Money, money, money. Everything got to do with money, you know. Now, when I went to New York, I didn't take no money from these folks because I know, I understand, I have a duty. Think about all the raping that have been done. They raped our children. They destroyed our children. You see, but we got to move to a different level. We got 17 days before the Sambo Super Bowl. And I'm not getting nervous. I think we're going to win this thing. I got folks in New York who's going to be putting up. Ain't nobody going to out-sample my samples. Ain't nobody. Anytime you have someone like my leather seats, you know. And a funny thing, a girl came to the church, and she was talking about her. And I told her, I'm really not interested in her lifestyle. You know, whatever she is, she is. And all I care about is her taking care of, you know, not destroying our children. You see, the future of our children, and she's good at that. She's a liar. She's a cheater. She's everything that you don't want to be. The girl said, I don't know where they get that title, whole bitch, from. But she's a real one, they claim. But that's between her and you. You know, that's what I told the girl. And then she jumped on this mayor. She said, she don't understand why the Nation of Islam don't sell. She said, they got to know that this guy is a Sambo. That's right. She said this. She said, they got to know. There's no way that people who allegedly been standing up for people, don't know that that boy is a Sambo. The worst. And if he wear that red suit, I see that red suit one more time on TV, I'm gonna have a major problem. When did you know? Man, go sit your butt down. Now you got your wife lying for you. Talking about you a good husband out here with babies floating everywhere around here. Stop it. Man up. Do what you're supposed to do. And you people that didn't go out and vote, shame on you. We know the white folks go out and vote. Those are the ones that put him back in office, these white devils, because they want him. They love when black folks mess over black people. They love it when black people mess over black people. And that's why they voted. And they went out. I would say every last white person that lived in this area votes for him. He only got 400 votes. I would say every last white person area voted for him. Every last person. There's not one that I would say that didn't vote for him. And then let me say this, Mr. Wayne C.T. Now, this is a shame. We used to be in bed, drunk as a skunk, peeing all in his shoes. He's supposed to be incarcerating this woman. And unfortunately, he started going with her. As a preacher, her husband caught him and killed her. That's right. Her husband caught them and killed her. And then he goes and get up on Sunday and preach in the church and somebody come to listen to him. We some sick folks. We are better than this. But anyway, February the 1st, 17 more days. 17 more days. Sambo Super Bowl. Houston, St. Louis, Missouri, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, Columbus, Ohio, Cincinnati, Ohio. We will be back. And on that note, I'm going to bring in my first guest, George, and we're going to talk about education. And I do apologize to you, George, because I did not do what I'm supposed to do. I've been so busy, and I'm going to bring you in, and you talk to me. George, are you there? Talk to me. Tell me what's going on with you.
Yes, sir, Reverend Pinkney. I am here.
All right, now listen. Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I want to apologize. I've been really, really busy. I've been traveling.
Apology accepted.
Yeah, and I wanted to get you all that information. But look, I know you got something for me. Give it to me straight.
Okay. you know, I have to agree with you, you know, especially on the point that you made that, you know, if you want to destroy it for and its culture, then you in education, you know, miseducation is the primary method that is used to actually do that. You know, they don't want to raise critical thinkers. They don't want to raise individuals who would see the problem for what it is. And I think many of us do see it for what it is, but we don't always know what we know, you know. But believe me when I say, when you see it and you suspect it, it's true. You know, you don't mm-hmm. have to see it in print or see it in writing. You know, you see what's happening, so you know it's true. And I want to, you know, talk to some parents. And one of the things about, you know, parents and parents being afraid, you know, I've dealt with enough parents to understand where their fear, you know, stems from. And where it stems from is that the attack upon their children. Their children are being used as pawns. And parents, you know, they can't stand to see their children attacked. And I get that, you know. I mean, I'll just tell you how it goes in here in the Kalamazoo. And the way it goes in Kalamazoo, if you speak up and speak out, if you seek to get a quality education for your child, they will call CPS.
Mm-hmm.
In most instances, yeah, and in most instances, and I mean most, like 90-some-odd percent of the cases that are filed on these parents against CPS, CPS will, you know, initiate a case. They'll go and they'll talk to the parents. They'll go visit the home. They'll walk up into the home. Everything is in order. And then they'll say, you know, this to me seems like retaliation. And they'll tell the parents,
yeah,
you're being retaliated against. You know, they will file false police reports. You know, reports that would, you know, unless you are aware of you know, the judicial system and how the judicial system works, you know, you would never know that you were the victim of a false police report. And so, you know, here in Kalamazoo, what they do is they file a report, you know, under a teacher's name who has left the district.
Mm-hmm.
So if that person has left the district and that person cannot be present for the trial, those charges should be thrown out, you know, plain and simple.
You know, but like
I say, a lot of parents don't know this, you know. Never give your information, you know, your child's information over the phone. You let them know that don't show up at the courthouse and give out any information. You let them know you want to see the charges, you know, you want to see the complaint. You want to, you know, don't waive your pretrial. Because you want to go into that pretrial, you want to be able to determine if whether or not that teacher shows up for that pretrial and testifies at that pretrial. Because if that teacher doesn't show up and testify, there's no reason for the pretrial to be going on. You know, in fact, there's no reason for no charges to be filed. They should be dismissed. You know, I mean, like I said, they'll do CPS. They'll file police reports, false police reports. One of the big things that they do is they suspend your children for the least little thing. You know, the least little thing, they'll suspend your children. You know, parents, you know, we're like, you know, why are you suspending my children for something as trivial as being tardy to school or something as trivial as you know, having missed school because the bus didn't show up. You know, they say that kids are the reason that they're not receiving a quality education is because they're not in school. In other words, they're absent a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality
mm-hmm.
is you got buses not showing up, it's not taking these kids to school. You got them being suspended, and the suspensions aren't being reported as suspensions. They're being reported as absences. You know, and so it makes it seem like as parents that you know, we don't care about our children's education. That couldn't be further from the truth.
Mm-hmm.
It couldn't be further from the truth. And so,
absolutely.
You know, so the bottom line is that, you know, if we can get 100 parents, and I want everybody to, like, send a child or send somebody that's in the house to get a pencil and paper, because I'm going to give you my email address. And when I give you my email address, I just want you to send a message to my email address, and I'll tell you what to put in the subject so that I know what it's for and, you know, who it's from. You know, I would like to get 100 parents together to see if we can't make some noise. Because the bottom line is that you cannot count on a group of people to educate another group of people. You know, back in the day, you know, like early on in the early 1900s, mid 1900s, 40s, 50s, especially even the 60s, I would probably say, you know, we worked in white people's houses and we raised their children. But we raised their children properly because we didn't want to suffer the consequences if we didn't. But see, now mm-hmm. we got these predominantly white female teachers that are in our schools. They're under threat, no kind of threat whatsoever. So you cannot expect a group of people to educate another group of people and put them in direct conflict with their own children. You know, they're going to be in direct competition with their own children. That's just human nature, you know. And so, like I said, I don't blame them for that. I blame us for that because we have not taken the initiative to say, okay, you know what, enough is enough. You know, we need to come together as a people. We need to, you know, make noise. And when I say make noise, I'm talking about Capitol Hill, not so much in Britain Harbor, because that's not where the power is. The power is on Capitol Hill, you know, the Michigan Department of Education. We need to make that kind of noise. You know, we need to get as much attention as we possibly can. We need to get some attorneys. Hopefully we can get a few black attorneys that will come together to listen to our gripes and to listen and especially to educate themselves, you know, about what's going on in the schools and how best to fight that battle in the courtroom. Because it needs to be
absolutely.
I
agree with you 100%, George, because I think that's important. Here's my question to you. Now, we know how our brothers and sisters, they love their children, but will they go that extra mile to help protect them? Because, one thing, the reason why I cater most of things to the women, because I know that women will stand up for their children. You see, they'll fight. A man will say, well, he'll man up and get over it, or she'll man up, whatever it is. But I believe that a woman will take this thing to a whole different level. I believe that. I believe that a woman, and I believe in women. You see, I believe in my black brothers a little bit, but the women's more. But here's my question to you. What language do we use to get people moving and standing up for their child educationally? What language can you think of that we can use?
Well, one of the things that we can do, you know, and we can discuss that whole language thing, because that's really takes up a lot of time. But one of the things that we can do is that as a group, we can start documenting. See, a lot of times when you get a phone call saying your child is suspended from school, you get a phone call saying your child is suspended from school, they can't come back for the next couple of days. And so, you know, when that child comes home, you keep them home for a few days, then you send them back. But you could make a phone call and you complain to the teacher, or you complain to the principal, you complain to whoever about this, that, and the other. But a phone call is not documentation. So we got to learn, we got to start an email campaign, okay? And we got to document everything that goes on. In other words, if you suspend my child, then I'm going to email you and say to you that you suspended my child for XYZ. And I want to see the incident reports, you know, that this so-called security guard or this so-called teacher, you know, filed on behalf of the school against my child. And this is how far they will go. They will say to a parent that, and I'll give you a couple of real life examples. I won't name no names. One mm-hmm. one it was a sexual misconduct, okay? And they said to this parent that their child received a text mail with the private parts of and showed those private parts to some of his classmates. And the child who received the text basically was suspended, black child. The child who sent the text, white child, was not suspended, okay? But the bottom line is that whoever sent the text is guilty, more guilty, of sexual misconduct.
Absolutely. That's against the law also. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. against that black child, you know. And so the bottom line is that, you know, I instructed the parent, and I stayed out of it because as soon as they see my name, they're going to escalate things. I stayed out of it, and then eventually they got back to the parent to say that, you know what, this never should have went this far, okay, because allegedly this was something that happened but did not happen in school because they couldn't find any witnesses to testify that this child showed them anything. And so when you start requesting the investigation, when you start requesting all witness testimony, when you request, you know, teacher statements and security guard statements and all of these things, you know, they got to come up with that stuff because that's your right to have it, you know, because they've accused your child of something heinous, you know. And so the bottom line is that, you know, we got to start an email campaign. If they suspend our children, we say, you suspended my child for this. This is what I want from you. You know, and also, would you put this in my child's record? Because, you know, whatever they accuse your child of, it's going to go in their record. But you want something in their record that's going to contradict that, okay? And so I agree with you. You know, I deal with mostly women. I have a couple of male parents who are very big on their children and their children's education and fighting for their children's education. And here's one of the things that we have to understand. You know, we cannot protect our children from this sort of thing, you know, because they're going to do whatever it is that they want to do. But what we can do is we can educate them as to why they're doing this to them. And we can also let them know that even though they're doing this to you, you're not in any trouble. And I want you to understand that we're going to fight against this, and I need you to stand strong while we do. Okay? Plain and simple. We cannot live in fear of them, you know, retaliating against our children in order to keep us in line. The bottom line is that when it's all said and done, if we do that child's third grade, fourth grade, sixth grade, ninth grade, a graduate, and that child does not have an education and goes out into the world not able to do anything, not able to get a job, not able to a good job, not able to support themselves adequately, not able to support a wife and children of their own, you know, and then they're prey and they're fodder for the criminal justice system. Because if you cannot read, write, and comprehend the English language, then the bottom line is that anything an attorney tells you, you have to believe that it's true, even though you may think it's not. You know, how do you prove it if you can't read and comprehend it for yourself? Okay. So, like I said, you know, we got to start holding them accountable by documenting everything that they do, okay? And then we can file, a state complaint, but we file it, you know, as a group, and have the whole school investigate.
I agree 100%. You know, the key word is document. You know, I believe in power in numbers. You see. One thing about
you
me,
have, you got to have numbers.
Right. One of the things how I be so successful, especially dealing with the criminal justice system, is that I normally have numbers. Like even like when I was in prison, I got over 25,000 letters from people. And when I got ready to go before the judge, we had about maybe 2,500 letters telling the judge. The judge was so mad that people would stand up for a black man, and he didn't like it, but I don't, like I told them, I don't care. You know, if you got something for me, give it to me. You know what I'm saying? Give it to me, because God is in the control of this stuff, you know, and that's what we have to teach people. God is in control, you know, until we realize that, and faith without works is dead. And this is what black people, they expect things to change by sitting home on the couch. You can't do that. I understand you're tired. I know that some of us have to work two jobs just to feed our family, but we got to make sure that we're doing what needs to be done for the next generation. You see, that's what's important. We can no longer sit around here and run off at the mouth thinking that these people are going to do the right thing. They are not going to do the right thing unless you force them. And, you know, there's never going to be a change unless they feel you can take it, you know. And that's why you have to have numbers. I mean, every 2 years, we will go and picket when they have the golf tournament here, and see they didn't think that black people can do stuff like that and organize stuff like that. They think that we can do nothing. Just like when I filed the petition for the water thing, you know, with Joe Biden in his office. They don't think black people have the intelligence to do anything like that. We don't know how to do nothing, or they want to think that we don't know how to do it, or they want to make us think we can't do that. But with this school system, that's something that we need to take control of. And I'm so happy that you have took the initiative up to do this. And we need to talk a little bit more, you know, like, you know, just off the show. Because I'm with you 100%. And I know there's a lot of people listening today. They're with you also. So I want to do stuff. I want to do stuff so we can build, you know, because that's what I believe in, building. Because we're up against the evil empire. They don't care nothing about us, you see, and they never will.
Absolutely.
That's what we have, we have to understand. They don't care nothing about us, and they never will. They would love to see us suffering.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
There's no question about it. And I need your audience to understand this. I mean, you know, I want to reiterate what it is that you just said. You know, the bottom line is don't be under any type of illusion or delusion that they are there to help. You know, they use language that makes it seem like they're being helpful when, in fact, they're not being helpful at all. You know, and the bottom line is that, yeah, we need to build. And I need to, you know, give everyone that has a pencil and paper or a pen and paper, you know, my email address. And email address is G White. The letter G of my first name, George, White, W-H-I-T-E, K as in Kevin, N as in Nancy, A as in Adam, N as in Nancy, @yahoo.com. And in the subject, I want you to put, let me see what I had it written down here, what I want you to put as the subject. Oh, academic data, A-C-A-D-E-M-I-C, academic. Data, D-A-T-A, okay? We need to start gathering data on our children, and there's a way that we can go about doing that by, as parents, simply requesting their state tests. We need to start gathering all of their state tests, and, you know, because then it becomes more personalized, because even though you have, like, the state and the state statistics, and they have, like, 84% of blacks, 67% of the brown Latinos, and then 50%, almost 50% of white students who, you know, can't read or write or comprehend the English language, you know, it's not personalized. We need to get that data with our children's names on it. We need to get that our child is in the eighth grade and in the third grade, fourth grade, fifth grade, sixth grade, seventh grade, eighth grade, they were not proficient in the English language of being able to read, write, and comprehend the English language. We need to personalize it, okay?
Absolutely.
We need to put names and faces to it. And let me
there
be very clear to the audience, okay? We cannot shy away from this. We cannot be afraid to do this, because the bottom line is that if we don't do this, we are condemning our children to lives of misery. You know, we do the hard work now. We deal with the, you know, we deal with whatever it is that we have to deal with now so that later we can take control of our education system, and we can put things in place, you know, that will make sure that our kids can read at a high level. My youngest son, I think I told you this once before, my youngest son was in kindergarten, in preschool. They wanted him to stay for kindergarten, and because they said he was a slow learner. And so I let him stay for kindergarten. I went out and I bought Hooked on Phonics. And then my wife and I, we work with him at home with Hooked on Phonics, and, of course, they work with him at school. So now we fast forward. He's 9 years old, and I asked him, I said, how come I don't never see you with a school book, a magazine, a newspaper, nothing? You're never reading. How come you're not practicing your reading? He says, Dad, I already know how to read. I want to squeeze his big-ass head. Excuse me. But fast forward. I transferred him from Paramount Charter School to Kalamazoo Public Schools. I transferred him from Kalamazoo Public Schools. And when I went to his first parent teachers conference, his English teacher said to me, "Mr. White, when Isaiah came over here, we tested him. And when we tested him, he tested at a 12.1. I said, "Hold on a minute. You're trying to tell me that my son, who I never, ever see practicing reading a school book, a magazine, a newspaper, a comic book, or nothing, can read, write, and comprehend the language at beginning freshman and college level?" He said, "Yes, sir. This is the power of all of our children, and they know it, and it frightens them to death." Okay?
Absolutely.
Because, yeah. And not only do we teach our children about, you know, how to read, write, and do math and those sort of things, but we also, mm-hmm. you know, teach them about camaraderie. We also teach them about togetherness. We also teach them about love for one another. We have to have access to our children. I bet you got parents right now that there are parents that can't even go to school to see their children because you got administrators saying, "No, you can't come up here."
Right.
You know,
they're
denying parents access to their children. They're denying them access to their grades, the tests, and everything. You know.
Yeah.
I mean, they just do what they want to do. Yeah.
You know? Absolutely. I hear you. But listen, I got to let you go. But look, let's do this. Let's do this. You know you got the second Sunday in every single month is yours.
Okay.
So let's make that happen. Next month is Black History Month. We're gonna really show out during that time because also that's when the Sambo Super Bowl would be going on, and I got you know we're heading in the right direction. But look, I want to thank you so much. But look. I'm always busy doing something, but call me. Let's talk.
Okay.
We can do that.
We'll do.
My brother.
We'll
all right
don't
now.
Don't forget to give my information to that woman who wants it because I love to go on
the okay.
show.
Okay. I can do that. I definitely will do that. We'll make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
And on that note, I got to let you go. I got to bring in my good friend, Big Les. Big Les, if you are there, you've got your hand up already. If you got your hand up, you're ready to roll. Big Les, Big Les,
hey,
Big
yeah.
Les,
yeah.
Big
yeah.
Les,
yeah.
talk
yeah.
to me.
Yeah,
hey,
fellow
what's
patriot,
up there?
One of the greatest patriots I know, Reverend Edward Pinckney, is on the line, and I'm talking to him. I don't believe it.
Hey, all I can tell you is going down. It's going down, and we're not taking no prisoners because we can't afford to feed them. That's how it goes.
I like your motto because it's always going down with me, and hey, somebody
yeah.
going down
there
with
you go.
Me, okay? You know, I like George. He's not got a good, a grasp on education with the young people. And that's why I'm
yeah.
at the school that I am now, volunteering. Jocelyn Bisson was there Friday. We had a special program that was teaching the children about health. One of the doctors there was giving the children a good lesson on their bodies. It was an
mm-hmm.
all-around good program, and it was topped off with the secretary's day, Jocelyn Brinson, having a mock election with the children at the school. They voted
mm-hmm.
on the
okay.
Lions game to see who would win the Lions. It was the overwhelming Lions win, but it was 19 that said Lions wasn't going to win, and then it was 8
uh-huh.
that was undecided. So, but it was a great event. And that's what I'm there for, to make sure the children understand the power of voting. And my understanding, if the principal Terry was right, that this was the first school that Jocelyn Bisson has ever been to in her tenure as the Secretary of State, which kind of surprised me when he said that, because
wow,
she should have been doing a round. I guess she's kind of busy. Yeah. And I did talk to her for a minute. I thank her for allowing Donald Trump to be on the ballot, because I want him on the ballot, because I want to see how many traitors, if he on the ballot,
oh.
I want to see how many traitors vote for him.
Oh, man.
It's in here. And it's, you know, I mean, how many, if you vote for the traitor, we got to know how many enemies we got to put up with here in Michigan. So, you know, it don't matter if he on the ballot or not, if he's still around, because I'm hoping that we come to our senses and he'd be under the jail by the time November comes around, okay?
Yeah. Big Les, let me tell you this. I was on the internet. Look, I don't know whether it's true or false. Now, you know, they were saying that Minister Louis Farrakhan was supporting Donald Trump. I can't say whether it's true. But he said his words. And I say this. I know the Democratic Party haven't been good to us. But the point is to put someone in that you know is a racist. I got a major problem with that.
Well, I heard some folks in Chicago, kind of upset with the Democratic Party, too. And they
I can see them being upset. But, what you going to do, put Donald Trump in there?
Well, it don't matter what snake is in there as long as we're doing our job protecting it. But, see, Kip O'Neill said all politics is local. See, and the problem I have, George should be running for a position. The only way you're going to change things is be in charge of things, okay? Let me hit Reverend Pickman because I don't think a lot of folks heard me, okay? The only way you're going to change things is you have to put people in charge that's going to change things. We have some people like this Jasmine Crockett. She taking Republicans and to task. She take them to the woodshed every time she get on the Congress floor. Okay, see, that's what we need. We need more of those people representing the people. Unfortunately, whatever we do, and it's a history. This you don't have to believe me. It's a history that the Congress and the representatives we elect don't do nothing for the people. They are interests of the corporate interest. And this goes back to Ronald Reagan, who was the most traitorous president of all time. I don't get why he was the poster boy for the Republican Party. But we have a whole lot of idiots, I call them evil backstabbers, scumbag terrorists, sellouts, that don't give a damn about the Constitution, okay? All they care about is their wallet. And unfortunately, it's hurting our country to the point where things are happening over the seas that's going to affect us in 10 or 20 years, that the generations that's going to be coming behind us, Reverend Pickman, going to be in doo-doo, okay? If we don't start educating them right now about the politics of States United and start fighting for African America, we're going to be celebrating one of the champions of all times to me. Martin Luther King, who had a lot of key phrases, said the unjust law is no law at all. And it's been a whole lot of unjust laws out here in States United. And unfortunately, we don't have the people to combat the people that's enforcing the unjust laws. There's no way the police should be acting the way they be acting in
this country right now,
in the 21st century. See, and the only way they acting like that is because they know they got backup in the White House. The police union is the strongest union in the country. It shouldn't have been. It should have been the auto workers or the Teamsters. The labor force should have had the strongest union, not the Gestapo force, okay? And that's unfortunate that we have put ourselves in a position of not understanding what's going on in our country. And it's been a systematic plan to do so. And you were right, Rep. 20, 30 years ago, when they took over the educational control of out of our hands, that was, to me, was traitorous right there. And May 3rd, 2002 was always going to be a momentum day for me because it showed me how lack of concern that African Americans have for the future generations to come. Because when the emergency manager law was under attack at the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals in Cincinnati, Ohio, the streets of Cincinnati should have been flooded with people. It should have been millions of people out there, like they out right now, protesting the Palestinian war. And I'm talking about across the world, they protesting against the genocide that Israeli is putting on the Palestinians, okay? It's been a genocide, educational genocide against us for a long time. And unfortunately, we don't know that. And I'm so proud to be at the school I am, with the principal I am. He wants parents inclusion. And if he wasn't, it was going to be that way because I'm there to make it happen, okay?
Yeah.
See, we need more people involved in the process. The system has been broken for a while, and the only way it's going to get fixed is we have put a bullseye on one bullseye on a target one at a time, like y'all doing right now. The Sambo Awards is a bullseye on the back of traitors to African America.
There you go.
I'm taking my hat off to you, Reverend Pickney, with keeping the Sambo Awards alive and well, because we have got too many Leroy Sambo Blacks in our community. And don't forget Leronetta Sambo Black, too, because they followed Bubba Clan White and Bubba Sioux Clan White plan to the chief, okay? And it pays well to sell. You said it don't. It does. I've seen people get six-figure salaries for selling the people out here in this city.
Yep.
Okay. So unfortunately, we're in the year 24 is the line in the sand. If we don't get it done or make a put a dent in it to get it rolling for 2025, we're gonna get steamrolled. But I see that's changing because everybody see States United at who they are when they are protecting murderers and killers of babies and women and people, innocent civilians, and making excuses to do so. So, Rev, you know, we got lots of work to do. I don't know if the reports is right about the minister going for Donald Trump, but maybe that's just something to wake the folks up to reality.
Yeah, and, you know, I pretty much said the same thing because, you know, I'm not very happy with the Democratic Party either. But unfortunately, what we have to do, we have to make sure that we're taking care of the future of our children. Because I believe that if we don't get this thing right and this guy get in there and now people don't understand this, but racism is alive and well. And them guys looking for a leader who is racist. Hoover or something like that. That's what they're looking for. They're looking for someone who's going to be right in your face and let you know I'm a racist and whatever y'all do, I got you back. You see, and that's a Donald Trump. A Donald Trump is a guy who will get right in your face and he'll tell these white devils that, hey, I got your back. I don't care what you do. I got you. You know, so don't worry about them.
See,
that's what
they're
looking for.
He is Ronald Reagan on steroids, Reverend Pinckney. And that's what they've been waiting for. Ronald Reagan set the tone for the change of this country, but the people set the tone for not doing anything about it. Like I said, that my biggest concern with the unions was that they tucked their tails under their legs when Ronald Reagan fired the PAPCO workers instead of doing what they did over in England when they shut that country down for 3 days when they tried to do the same thing over there to labor. That's why the Labor Party is strong. That's why they have more benefits than what we have over here. That's because the people in here, they sold their soul to the devil, Reverend Pinckney. And you were talking about that red suit that he's wearing. That's the appropriate color for the Satan, don't you say?
Man, look. And see, black people need to know this too. Anytime that you see the news media trying to put you out there as a black person, you know it's something because they don't give a rat's butt about us. They don't care nothing about us. When I see that red suit, I cut the TV off. I don't want to see that red suit. I don't want to see it. I mean, they must have showed that red suit at least 200 times or more.
Every time they get
showing it.
Well,
so, and black people ain't smart enough. They ain't smart enough to see through that. The white man got to tell him he's a sellout, that he's a Sambo. A black man can't tell black folks that somebody's a Sambo and a sellout. It got to be done by white folks. That's the only black people believe these folks. And
well,
I don't
and
like
that's
it.
Been my concern. Yeah, but see, that's been my concern for some time, Reverend Pinckney, that we have not believed in ourselves. And unfortunately, we have folks like you that a known protector of African America is not getting the credit that he deserves, and that's why people listen to the propaganda. And it's easy to listen to that propaganda. You know why they do that, Reverend Pinckney? Because if they believe it, then they have to work to get it to change it, okay? And a lot of people don't like to work, okay? They don't want to work hard and or think about anything but their own personal, goals in life. They don't want to think about nobody else.
No.
And that's unfortunate. It's too unfortunate, and too many people are like that right now. You know, you heard my sellout story. I used to be able to walk out the door, walk down the street a few miles, and without running into a sellout. But now I can just open up the door before I get off the porch. I'm running into a sellout. That's how many it is around here.
Yeah.
So that's
everywhere. They're everywhere,
yeah.
And they run the packs. They run the packs.
So what you gonna run, Reverend Pickney? You step out the door. You can't. You know. That means you ain't talking to a whole lot of folks in Benton Harbor, right?
Mm-hmm. I ain't talking. Look, and that's good news because that way my phone don't ring. See, that's really what it's all about. I told my wife the other day. I said, listen, the less people call me, the happier I am. Because I know that they waiting. Look, here's something else. They're using the Boys and Girls Club to groom these young kids to be sellouts. That's how World Pro operates. And the parents, they so naive that they don't get the message. They don't get the understanding. They don't understand what's going on with their child. Then your son get out here and shoot up 5-6 people, and you want to know why he doing it. You see?
Yeah.
You know?
That's it. But see, that's what I'm talking about, Reverend Pickney, is that the parents, they want to easy out. But they have not educated revolutionary. And we had a whole lot of revolutionary people in our history, in the 20th century and in the 21st century. We had a whole lot of them, but they rather not listen to the revolutionaries. But on the other side, they have built a whole lot of racists. See, they've been doing their job, but we ain't been doing our job, okay? Revolutionaries in this country get shot or sent to jail, okay?
Yeah.
And they know.
Yeah.
And maybe that's what the mom said.
And you got to be willing to pay the price.
Right. You got to pay.
You got to be willing for the future. For the future. I'm willing to make the sacrifice for 5 children. Because somebody got to do it.
I've always ready to make that sacrifice, Reverend Pickney. That's how I grew up knowing about the revolutionary people. I grew up with one of the greatest, Coleman Young, the senior, okay? He was one of the greatest. He was a Tuskegee Airman, a Paul Robeson. Those were two of my number one heroes that passed away. Now, Reverend Pickney is one of my heroes, too, right? Because he stands up and he's doing stuff that I like to be done for the people of my country.
Absolutely. And the thing is, at this stage in our life, we got to want to do it. We got to stop playing. Because these guys, see, the difference is they get paid to think about ways to destroy us. That's a job for them. They get a salary for that. You see, they work. They even in Washington D.C. They figure out a way how are we going to destroy the black community completely? Because these Negroes, they have sustained all these years on chillings and guts and all this other stuff. How are we going to get rid of all these black folks? It's 50 million of them. So here's the deal: they bring in some new niggas. They bring them in, and these niggas is willing. The in Chicago, New York, to be outside in the snow and cold, it's like here it's going to be 19 below zero here. And they willing to do that.
Yeah.
They know that they'll work for a dollar and a half. They'll work. I can go get 5 of them and pay them $100 together, and they'll pay my whole house. And you go get a black man to do it, he won $1,000.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's the way
it is. Let me ask you a question there, Rev. You know, you were talking about supporting, not supporting. How many of these entertainers are supporting revolutionary people? I never heard Lil Wayne.
None of these
put
people gonna do that
out there.
Go. You know why? They tell the athletes, do not invest in black community, going to lose money. So you going to give the money to the governor? I mean, to the IRS? You going to give the money to them? Do that make any sense? If you making, 30% of these athletes' money go to the IRS. 30%. Do you know what we can do with 30% of 50 million? in our community, gas stations, health centers, grocery stores, clothing stores, you name it, cleaners, all this stuff we could have. But they tell them not to do it so they can stop our community, and they're doing exactly that. These, they nothing but shambles.
Yeah, see, that's what I thought, Reverend Pittman. That's what I thought, see. And if we got, because, you know, I grew up listening to Harry Belafonte and Eartha Kitt to sponsor the people, James Brown. It was a whole lot of Sammy Davis Jr. It was a whole lot of people supported the cause of betterment of the country that they lived in. But unfortunately, we have a whole lot of, and they see, that's the genius of these guys, okay? They see what we did, and now they know how to make a chess move to stop that movement from happening in the 21st century. See, they put a lot of things in place. Like when I was watching television in my uncle's house, watching Walter Cronkite on the evening news, watching those body bags come in or body coffins come in, flag great coffins, that was powerful. I knew something, even back then as a child, that, hey, this is something that's powerful, a statement that these young men that probably ain't even had a beer, probably ain't had his first sexual experience, probably ain't had his first college class done, and he dead in that coffin. And that's why the protests go on. And that's why they took over the media. That's when they started controlling the media, Reverend Pinkney.
Yeah, and absolutely. The way they, this is for everybody. Anytime you see the media praising anybody black, you know he's a sellout. Because they will never, ever praise anybody who's helping the black community. They not going to do it.
That's right.
If you giving out gym shoes, they might, he's giving out gym shoes. He's giving out turkeys, you know, that stuff like that, stuff that don't really mean nothing, you know. And but
that's right.
They'll talk about stuff like that. But they're not going to talk about somebody who putting a gas station, health centers, and a gas station, getting the dollars to continue in the community. They're not going to talk about that. Because they don't want black folks to think on that level. They want black people to stay dumb, you see. And I got to give us credit. They're doing a good job. Because I got to tell you, Denton Harper is one of the dumbest communities in the nation. You know, they don't even know which way is up.
Well, that's by design, though, Reverend Pickett. You know that. You know, that's when they took over the educational control out of our hands. And when you attack the biggest and the strongest African-American city in the whole country, then nobody's did anything to combat the fascism that came in and took over. And, you know, here it is. You didn't vote for a school board. Then the governor saying, your vote don't matter. That's what they were saying to me. Your vote didn't matter. We don't want that school board that you elected. We're going to put in our own administrative people.
There you go.
What don't you get about that?
They don't get it. Look, this is the world that we're living in. This is the world we are living in right now. And if we don't get better, they're going to try another way to wipe our butts out. Well, look, you got a minute and a half to say whatever you want, and we got to go, but I enjoyed your conversation. You enjoyed, y'all put it on me today, and I really appreciate that, you know. I'm supposed to have someone on next week, but I can't remember who. But anyway, I've been so busy, and I'm running here just trying to make it happen. But the Sambo of the Year Award, we're 17 days away.
Don't burn yourself out now. You're burning the candle. Don't burn the candle at both ends.
I know. I'm doing too much. I'm getting ready to get out here and shovel some snow as soon as I get off this. And I got a couple of calls coming in from prison. So I'm good to go. And you're right. I know. Man, I love you, man, Big Les. You know, you're my man.
Yeah,
and we don't.
That's why I take the time to, you know, when you say with you, because hey, I wouldn't do this with anybody else when it comes to playoff time. Okay.
Hey, did the Lions win today?
Well, they'll be coming on in a couple hours, okay?
Oh, okay.
So, but
okay.
Even if the Lions were playing at the time, if Reverend Pinckney want me on and anything he want, Big Les is there because he respects you that much,
appreciate
okay?
That. You know, that's
and
kind
of
words, man.
I love it. You know, your backup, Dorothy, y'all are just two wonderful Patriots that I know. See, I couldn't do enough for great pictures like you. See, that's why I went up to that golf tournament, well, that golf thing that you had.
Yeah.
Knowing my
back
was going to kill me. I went there because Reverend Pinckney is a hero of mine, and I wasn't going to let him down no matter how much pain I was in on that day. I was going to be there for a great patron like you. So that's why I stand with the great patriots, and there's very few of them out there that I'll do what I do. Okay.
Hey, man.
Yeah, and
you bring a tear to my eyes. You know I'm weak, and then,
I'm
nothing but a crybaby.
I respect you, Reverend Pinckney. That's how much I respect you. And Big Les ain't got a whole lot of respect for a whole lot of folks out there. And he let them know. He's the kind of guy that lets you know if he like you, and he's the kind of guy that lets you know he don't like you. Like James Tate, when he was there Friday, he know I didn't like him. He didn't even come my way. He know that. Because,
we
know. But guess who came next to me? Jocelyn Benson came back and talked to me, okay? All right. Because she know I'm the kind of guy that she can approach, okay? And I'm down for her, and so I'm not, okay?
There you go.
So, Reverend Pinckney, thank you for inviting me on, man. I appreciate you. You know, you invite me on to your program. Always a pleasure to, you know, talk to you and your listening audience. And I wish them well on the great King holiday. I don't do celebrations for kings because I just run into too many of this the evil backstabbing scumbag to sell out. And I don't deal well with hypocrisy.
I got you again for the second week in February.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Nope. That sounds good. I'll put that on my calendar, Rev. Okay.
All right, big guy. We'll talk soon.
Rev.
God bless everybody. And happy Martin Luther King Day. So let's keep
it
moving.
Thank you, brother. Take care.
God bless you all. All right now. All right.